Welcome back to Film Shake. I'm Jordan.
And I'm Nick.
This is our review of the film, The Dead Don't Die, directed by Jim Jarmusch. So if you haven't seen that film yet, go check it out in theaters. It just came out a few weeks back. And there's spoilers in this show, so watch out. Go watch it first, and then come back. This film is getting some pretty poor reviews out there on Rotten Tomatoes, like 53%, I think was what I saw. Okay. And I was kind of hesitant going in.
Me too.
I wanted to be a little prepared to be let down.
Yeah. Let me tell you, I decided, you know what, the reviews aren't great. You can only see so many movies. It's Father's Day weekend. I'm not going to worry about this. And then I got a little text from Mr. Jordan Courtney.
Texted you up and I was like, hey, you want to go see this film at 10:35 at on a Sunday or something
like
that? Yeah,
that's like my favorite time of night. Not really, like 3 a.m. The wishing hour is the best. Yeah, all that to say, you and I don't agree with this Rotten Tomatoes assessment. Not that Rotten Tomatoes is like this unified voice. It's just, you know, an amalgamation of everyone else's review scores. And let's be honest, like what counts as a positive or a negative is sometimes really nebulous. You'll see someone diss a movie and then it get counted as fresh.
Yeah. They have a mixed review or a mostly negative review, but then somehow it's still fresh. I don't know.
Or the opposite.
Yeah. But I knew going into this is like, okay, it's a zombie comedy by Jarmusch. So I bet most people are going into it thinking it's a zombie comedy and not accounting for it's a Jarmusch film. Or
exactly.
They haven't seen other Jarmusch films. Like, again, if you haven't seen his other stuff, definitely go check it out. But he's known for very dry, deadpan, you know, very slow-going, simplistic cinema. It's definitely not your typical fare that you go and see like a, you know, lighthearted or gross-out comedy. It's not going to be, you know, your typical zombie film. So seeing the reviews is like, okay, most people are probably going into it not having the proper expectation.
I want Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead remake tone. Go.
Exactly. Or like Zombieland or something else like that.
This is not that. That is, you know, faster paced, lots and lots and lots of stuff going on. This is Jim.
This is Jim. Jim.
This is him.
Jarmusch.
That's right. So The Dead Don't Die, it takes place in Centerville, Pennsylvania. I don't know if that's a real place. It's kind of the stereotypical small town out
America.
In the boonies where these things happen, right? Alien invasion or zombie apocalypse. It's always in one of these little podunk towns. So we've got Adam Driver and we've got Bill Murray. They're two policemen. They're really a small town, kind of quiet, salt of the earth guys. I think they're both single. They're not in any kind of romantic relationship. They're kind of just driving around town, making sure everything's okay. And there's an incident with Hermit Bob, played by our old friend Tom Waits, old friend of the show.
Old friend of Jarmusch, too.
How's it going, Tom?
Hey, Tom. How you doing there, Tom?
So they have an interaction with him, and the movie... Oh, that was nice. That was really nice. So the movie just kind of goes on from there. The weird things start happening. You know, the encounter with Tom Waits is weird, but the moon spinning off its axis is even weirder.
Right, and the sun won't go down. It's supposed to be dark, and the sun is still out, so...
And lo and behold...
Technology is not working.
That's right.
Like that.
And then the night finally does fall. Who comes up out of their grave but Iggy Pop?
Iggy Pop and a female zombie come up out of the ground, and they...
He's got a lust for life. He's back.
He's got a lust for coffee, too.
That's right. So he comes back. There are zombies in this movie. Lots and lots of zombies. People slowly start to come back from the dead, which we can get into this here. If you've seen any other zombie films, you know a lot of times there's some cultural commentary that is thrown in there, not really thrown in. A lot of times it's the basis of the film.
It's overt. Yeah,
that's right.
It's a very obvious metaphor.
I really enjoy the first two Romero zombie movies. I love Night of the Living Dead. You know, you get this racial commentary.
Racial commentary.
Very
yeah.
good. And then in Dawn of the Dead, you get this consumerist commentary. Mm-hmm. This is really where The Dead Don't Die takes a page from, but then kind of rips the page out and crumbles it up.
Right.
And then uncrumbles it, then hands it to you, then takes it back, then reads it out loud to you.
I love it because it satirizes itself. You know, the message and the commentary on Trump's America and climate change being denied by the officials. You know, that's going on in the background of this film. Oh,
that was great, yeah.
You know, nothing's really happening here. Don't worry about it. And then, yeah, the zombies start coming out of the ground because of the moon is off its axis, you know, due to some... you know, terrible climate thing
because
of the humans.
And these zombies can talk. I didn't say yes. that. That's the departure from Dawn of the Dead. Generally, zombies just go, meh. But these usually can say one word, and it's whatever they were obsessed with in life.
Right. You know? And that's where you get some of the best laughs, too, is where you have Iggy Pop, like you mentioned, coming out and going to the diner and just moaning, coffee.
That's right.
After they disembowel two of the diner workers, they smash coffee pots on their heads.
That's right.
To drain the coffee.
And in probably, this movie is so meta, but in possibly the most meta moment, the theme song of the movie is by Sturgill Simpson. It's a fourth wall breaking theme song, as in Adam Driver declares it to Bill Murray as the theme song for the film as they're driving the car.
Yeah.
He actually plays a zombie, and he's dragging a guitar down the street.
Oh, yes. And I love the moment with the zombies all have cell phones in their hands and they're roaming around the streets and they're looking for Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi, Siri,
yeah. Bluetooth.
It's all sort of ridiculous layers piling up on one another where he's definitely having fun with it.
Oh, yeah.
He's not... I looked at some of the criticisms for the film afterward and I think this is an intentional movie. He is having fun. He's not taking himself seriously.
Yeah, people are complaining about it being too obvious, but I mean, he states to himself in interviews I read that zombie movies, the zombie metaphor, like social commentary metaphor in a zombie film is always very obvious. And I think he succeeds in that he pokes fun at it here.
He subverses the trope in a way and points out his own film as product.
Right.
By doing so, which adds an entire another layer to everything.
Yeah.
And then we just get this beautiful ballet of death at the end where Tom Waits is commenting on society as he's done throughout this film, but really just reaching this ballet opera of doom and pessimism and doomsday preacherism where he's just talking about how screwed up the world is, how everyone's
all jacked up like that pile of ants.
That's right, the pile of ants he keeps looking at and talking about throughout the film. This Bill Murray and Adam Driver killing a lot of zombies, really surprisingly. You know, they haven't done much in the film, but they really get this hypnotic, beautiful scene where they're just blowing away zombie after zombie. It's really stylized. If anything, that's not that Jarmusch-like. It's maybe this just in how kinetic it is. It's a really beautiful scene, and the music is playing in the background. And then they get eaten alive by the zombies, and only Tom Waits remains.
Again, throwing away the trope of the good guys always winning in the end. They get eaten by the pile of zombies. But yeah, I love Tom Waits' commentary in the end. And I feel like it goes so over the top and out of touch that that's where the film really starts to satirize its own social commentary message, because it's talking about, you know, I guess we're all like those zombies, you know, we're all jacked up like that pile of ants. We're all just wanting the next newest Nintendo Game Boy. it's just like so ridiculous.
If you're only willing to look at the film as being one thing, you're going to hate it, because it's not a straight satire. It's not just a meta commentary on satire. It's so many things, and it is messy, but I like films to do this at times. I think it's necessary if we're going to keep film as a viable format, that it has to stay fun and be able to poke fun at itself.
Right.
And this really, it's not one of Jarmusch's best films, but I think when time passes and people are able to look at it more objectively, I think they're going to be able to see some of the, just to take Adam Driver's character's vocabulary, some of the neat things that he does in the movie.
Yeah. I think if it took itself too seriously, it would just ruin the whole thing. You know, it'd be like, again, people would criticize it as this very left-wing, backlash against Trump administration, which I guess in a sense it kind of is. It has that commentary, but it doesn't take itself seriously. You know, in that regard, it makes fun of itself, and it's just he's just having fun with the genre.
And the fact, too, that even if you want to say, you know, with the Steve Buscemi character, he's this horrible racist guy, but, you know, so many people can fall into the stereotype. He just adds a layer on it by the fact that his best friend is played by
Danny Glover. Yeah. And he apologizes in making like a joke about the black coffee and not kind of getting it until it's too late after he said it. So,
yeah. While he has his Make America White Again hat on.
Yeah. Keep America White Again.
Yeah, that's it. So
absurd.
There's so many layers to the film. I feel pretentious saying that. I feel like Rick McCallum saying that the Star Wars prequels have so many things going on.
It's the range theory.
Yeah.
It's the meta theory. I think we have to talk about the end in the car where they even reference the script. Because the whole time Adam Driver is saying, you know, at one point he says, I think it might be zombies when they're all thinking it's wild animals. And I'm thinking in the audience, where does that come from? How
it's
do you
just
know?
Out of left field.
Out of completely. Left field. You think it's zombies? Like, what gave you that idea? There's no realistic expectation for it to be zombies. And then at the end, Bill Murray asks him, how do you know you keep saying that this is going to end badly. This is going to end badly. And you've been so calm and collected. What's your deal? What do you know that I don't know? And he's like, well, I've read the script. Oh, Jim gave you the script? That's yeah, right. He gave me the whole script. Oh, he only gave me the scenes that I'm in. What a dick.
That's right. And it's such a subversion, too, because at that point I think, oh, well, it's just going to go full Blazing Saddles here, and it doesn't.
And then it pulls itself right back into the moment.
You go straight from
moment.
That, yes, yeah. to the film's most horrific moments. Yeah. So it never settles for, this is, okay, now you know what I'm going to do. You figured me out. I'm done.
Yeah. It goes off script even when the Tilda Swinton gets beamed up as an alien. They're like, was that in the script you read? No.
Yeah.
So I love that. You know, it's just how he plays with that, and he's just having fun, and just the little inside jokes for those that are Jarmusch fans, you know.
It's the Mars Attacks of Jim Jarmusch's.
Maybe so. It might be.
I haven't seen that. I saw it in the theater. Because
that was pretty widely panned, as I remember.
Yeah, I remember. People hated that. I loved it in 1997. I don't know, and I've referenced this before, too. Humor can be a specific thing. It can be a broad thing. There is a specific humor here. There's some broad jokes too. And I've don't know if I mentioned it before, but you know, when I was like 4 or 5, I watched King Kong with my dad. Every time King Kong stomped on someone, he laughed. My dad just laughed hysterically. So I thought, oh, that's what funny is. And I've had a pretty bleak sense of humor since then. I still do.
That's right.
So, you know, Adam Driver walking into a diner full of dead bodies and saying, yuck.
Ooh, yuck.
That killed me for probably a solid 5 minutes. That's not going to be funny to everyone.
No, it might not be for everybody. I think there might have been somebody sleeping in our theater. I heard some snoring, but it could have been a zombie on the soundtrack, too. You never know.
That's true.
Coffee. It could have been Iggy Pop.
What are we going to do when Iggy dies? And I say all this, I know one Iggy Pop song. Like, Lust for Life is like the only Iggy Pop song I'm aware of. I like
a lot of the Stooges stuff, Search and Destroy. It's a great track. And Life Aquatic, it's pretty well used.
Oh, yeah,
there.
Great stuff, man. Great stuff.
Yeah, it's not a perfect film. It's not top-tier Jarmusch to me, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was really funny at times. I don't know if you hadn't been there in the theater, if I would have laughed out loud as much, but because I enjoyed so much hearing you just belly laugh at some of these jokes, and then that got me into it. I think even more if I had watched it by myself. So it was really funny at times. Parts of it did feel awkward and a little stilted and weird. And this is the road I want to go down with that: was that intentional? Because there's a lot of homage, there's a lot of callbacks to like Romero and other zombie films and like B horror stuff going on. And those films, you know, I even read an interview with Jarmusch, how he talks about those films have crude acting, they're really boring at parts, and the setup is really takes a long time to like get to the end where the zombies come out and there's action going on. And there's the same thing going on in this film where some of the scenes just feel like throwaway scenes. There's a scene where they're talking in front of the diner where the joke kind of goes on too long. And then there's a scene where they're talking in front of the motel later with Selena Gomez's character. It just feels like a throwaway scene. Like, why is this here? And I wonder how much, because I mean, Jarmusch, he's not a new filmmaker. He knows what he's doing. He knows how to make a good film.
It feels intentional,
yes.
Even though it feels extraneous at the same time.
Exactly.
And so there's a lot of things that it seems like he is setting up this traditional zombie movie. You know, Selena Gomez shows up And there's a scene where the gas station attendant kind of has a moment with her. He's this nerdy guy that everyone calls Frodo. And there's this Quentin Tarantino-esque moment where he looks at her.
The gold sparkles flash
around her head. And you're like, oh, she's going to be like this hero. She's going to be this badass heroine.
Or they're going to get together and they're going to be some romantic thing going on.
They're going to pair up and kill zombies.
They're
going
to pair up.
She's going to bring out something in him that wasn't there before. Nope.
Doesn't happen.
We get that scene of her, then we get the scene outside the hotel where she literally just asks for change from
Adam Driver.
And then she dies off screen, you know, a few minutes later, and that's it. Nothing else. And, you know, I heard Bill Murray say before he did the film, he didn't think he would like Selena Gomez. He had a very cliched image of what she would be like in his head, and then he found he liked her a lot. He was like, I wish that I could bring her to meet my mom. You know, I liked her that much.
Oh, wow.
But, and not like in a romantic sense, just like, you know.
Yeah, she's a cool person.
Yeah. So that really made me think, like, oh, she's going to be an integral part of this film. Nah.
Yeah, I thought Gomez did a decent job here. There again, it really is just setting up a trope and then cutting it down. And I think that's what Jarmusch is doing a lot throughout the film, where he's setting up these typical zombie film, horror film tropes, and then he's just saying, nope, taking a right turn here, gonna usurp your expectations and just have fun with this genre and play around.
Did you feel like Tilda Swinton's character, and I'll set her up, she works in a mortuary, she owns one, she's really weird.
Yeah.
People think she's Scottish. Did you find that her character was almost like a middle finger at, you know, just genre expectations? Because she ends up having the most ridiculous storyline. We cut to her at one moment painting these ridiculous clownish faces on the dead bodies that she's supposed to be, you know, making look great for their funerals.
Yeah.
And then she's also a samurai. She has incredible skill with a samurai sword, which we actually do get a few moments of her, like some real action of her slashing up zombies.
Yeah.
But then she's an alien and a spaceship comes down and she gets on it and leaves. And again, it's like whatever setup you thought, like she was going to save the day.
Right.
No, she's just an alien who was on Earth and got stuck in the zombie apocalypse. And she goes to a computer at one point and types furiously and then goes back out. Yeah. And a spaceship comes down and beams her up. And that's it.
Yeah, I thought her whole character was, again, playing with the trope of, like, you know, that badass character who's going to save the day, who's kind of weird at the beginning, but comes through in the end to help out the heroes. And then, yeah, that totally gets subverted as well. She's just, you know, beamed up by the spaceship and the zombies keep coming and Bill Murray and Adam Driver, you know, go down under the horde when they're eaten. So,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and it's a really grim ending.
That reminds me, everyone dies except, and this is the one trope that actually holds true in this film, Tom Waits is so awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Tom Waits. I love Tom
Waits.
Down
in a hole. He's down in a hole this whole movie, you know, like metaphorically in some deep philosophical hermit hole. The film just cuts to him walking around the woods, kind of peering through, looking at what's happening to the other characters and making these really deep observations on life and society. Really out of touch observations because he references a Nintendo Game Boy at one point.
Which had me in stitches.
We both died on that part.
We got to talk about the ending line from Tom Waits and his social commentary. He just says, "What a fucked up world."
That's right.
And then the movie ends.
Did we sit through the whole credits because we were still laughing? That line destroyed us.
Yeah. I was laughing well into the credits. I can't think of a film I've done that for in a long time.
And I just crashed, I think, in a previous something that we recorded. It's all becoming a blur now. I'm like falling into the dead don't die mode, but it's such a cliche line. It's a movie that's trying too hard to make a commentary on mankind going mad would have that line as the ending line.
Yeah.
But in the context that they give Tom Waits saying it, it just killed me.
Yes.
Because he's made this crazy speech that would be really pretentious if not for the fact that he's so out of touch in his references or just so not relevant to
Nintendo Game Boy. Yeah.
Oh, that it was perfect. It was the best line the film could have ended on.
Yes, I totally agree. It landed for me right there. That was just what sealed it for me to make this what felt like a great film. Or I don't know if I'd call it a great film, but just a really enjoyable film.
It was a Filipina box spring hog.
What would you give this on your star rating scale?
I would give it a 7 out of 10, just because it's tough to give.
I feel like I personally like this a lot, just on my personal taste. Like, I give it like a 9 out of 10, but mm-hmm. for everyone on earth, I'd probably have to give it a 7 out of 10, just because, you know, the pacing is going to be difficult for some people, and because it's not a straight Jarmusch.
Yeah,
it, you know, I can't quite justify it. Right. I like it.
It's kind of like, where do you put this in his filmography? Yeah. It's hard to place, but I like that he's playing with the genre here. And he actually, you could see that all throughout his career. This is a little bit more of a broad comedy, I think, than he's ever done. And so that, I think parts of it feel weird because of that, and because of the intentional awkwardness, slowness that he wants to put in there. I think it might suffer from that a little bit, but overall, when it has those, that blending of the genre with that classic deadpan Jarmusch, I think is what really makes it land, what makes it hilarious, laugh out loud, funny.
Right.
So
on.
I'm going to give it 4 out of 5. I thought it was pretty solid overall, even though it had some of those quirks. Maybe 3.5 would be more fair, or more realistic. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty good.
It was in our wheelhouses for sure.
Definitely, definitely. I also, before we go, wanted to comment or recommend even that if you go see The Dead Don't Die and you haven't seen Only Lovers Left Alive, that is another great genre film by Jarmusch where he's got Tilda Swinton and Tom Hiddleston playing vampires. So
I gotta see that one.
Horror film. Another one that was pretty mixed. A lot of people didn't like or didn't care for, thought it was too slow or didn't really go anywhere. I personally loved it. It's kind of like a tone poem, just a talking head film. These two characters just exploring their history and art and romance and all these things that they've experienced. You know, they're vampires, so they've lived forever or for a long time. Again, you're going to go into it thinking it's a vampire movie, you'd probably be disappointed. But if you go into it thinking, oh, this is a Jarmusch film that just happens to have vampires and he's playing with the genre a little bit, you'll have a good time. So,
right on.
Can't guarantee that. It's not for everybody, but I liked it.
I think I'm going to like it.
Yeah, hopefully so. All right, well, that's it for our bonus episode of Film Shake this time. Thanks for listening. You can email us again if you have any feedback at filmshakepodcast@gmail.com.
I also write text reviews for all the movies we watch. I haven't decided if I'm going to do one for Dead Don't Die yet, but I may. We'll see.
All right.
You can find that at theexperiment.blogspot.com.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Take it easy.
Hey, what happened to the theme song?